Welcome to Liberal Halvtime. My name is Mathilde Fasting, and today I'm joined by documentary producer, women's activist and leader of Survivors of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group, Yael Scherer. We are going to talk about the situation in Israel, the war in Gaza, and the violence against women in the Hamas attack October 7th. Welcome, Yael.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Our topic today is the sexual violence against women on October 7th. But before we go there, tell me a bit about your background and your work in general.
I'm the head of the Survivors of Sexual Violence Advocacy Group. It's an organization that I started in 2019. It's an organization of survivors of sexual violence in order to better the care and policy to do with survivors and to do with sexual violence in general. I'm a survivor myself. My father was convicted and served time in jail in Israel. And I started this organization because I really thought that the voice of survivors was not heard in the rooms around the tables that make the decisions for us. And I really think that the government needed to hear this voice and that the knowledge that we hold is important. I later went on to study and I studied health management and I specialize in the care of survivors and victims of sexual violence, emergency care, collection of evidence, forensics and rape kits.
Mm. And you also made films.
I made a film, yes, a documentary film about my court case against my father. It's called Dirty Laundry, and it has been shown around the world over the last 10 years.
Mm. So, and now, as I just said in the introduction, you are engaged in looking into the attack on, or attacks on October 7th. So, before we go into those details, in your words, what happened on October 7th? And I guess that you were in Israel at that time.
I was in Israel at that time. I do travel a lot overseas because I consult other governments and I work with other regions, lately the Ukraine. But I was in Israel at that date. It was a holiday, Jewish holiday, Simchat Torah, and Saturday, Shabbat. And 6:30 in the morning, Hamas invaded the south of Israel with thousands of terrorists entering with armed vehicles, missiles, hand grenades, guns, and they started killing Israelis and foreign nationals living there, kidnapping them, and also, as you said, raping them and sexually assaulting them.
Mm. So do you remember what the news or how that was perceived? How was everything during this hours, the early morning of that Saturday? How do you remember anything about what came out on the news? How did people react to this?
Well, immediately in the morning, the news already reported 200 dead. And I was at my mother's house and my mother looked at the TV and said, if they report 200 dead at this early time of the morning, there's going to be more than 1,000. Of course, my mother's a smart woman and she was correct. But I was supposed to meet the next day with the Ministry of Health on those topics, nothing to do with Hamas, just about a policy to do with collection of evidence and rape kits. And of course, I got a phone call, and of course, the meeting was cancelled. But it was very obvious that we might have to talk again. Of course, we had no idea that sexual violence was going on. I want to be very clear. sexual violence is not something that's typical to the conflict between Israelis and Palestinians, and has not happened widespread or systematic in any other case or attack. So this is something that was new to us, and Israeli authorities did not expect and did not foresee, and we had no idea that something like this would happen. So it was Sunday when we first started to understand that something is happening. At first, we thought it might be just one case, maybe a few cases, but it certainly became very clear over the first few days that it's a phenomena, and it's something that we've not seen before.
Mm. And then, of course, you were quite quickly, as I understand it, drawn into or changing the things that you were looking at and drawn into the investigations of exactly these things happening on the 7th of on October 7th. So yeah. How are you and others? How did this happen? And do you work? Who do you work with? And what are you? What did you do just when you started to look into these things?
So because I'm an expert in policy to do with emergency care of sexual violence cases, forensics, so I was immediately, once it became clear that this was something that was widespread, I was immediately contacted by several different ministries. And immediately they asked me to help them in issues regarding policy. How do we do that? How do we address this? So what do you think should be done with survivors, eyewitnesses? So immediately I started to pitch in and work with them. And it's just been ongoing for months. So I've been working with the health ministry, with the IDF, with the police, with the Ministry of Social Affairs, and with the Prime Minister's office, just to make sure that the policy is, I don't know if correct is the word, because sometimes I don't get what I want, but I definitely try to bring my input forward.
Mm. How easy or difficult probably are these investigations? Is it, to contact eyewitnesses, how can they, what do they explain?
I don't do it myself.
No.
Okay. So I'm only involved with the policy. So what I do is try to help to determine how it is done. I don't do it myself. I always leave it to the professionals. So social workers, psychologists, the police investigators, and just I steer clear of things that are not exactly alongside my line of work, because I really think they need to be handled by professionals.
So how do you think the work, how is it proceeding? Is it, we are now 5 months.
Yes.
So, what have you found out so far?
So this is the biggest police investigation that the Israeli police has ever conducted. And of course, just to make it very clear, we are now holding hundreds of people alive. They are arrested. And we need to prosecute them. We can't hold them forever without a trial. So we need to prosecute them. And of course, among the hundreds that we are holding now, some are Hamas and some are other organizations and some are civilians that cross the fence into Israel. We have different groups and different crimes. So, of course, we are holding people who killed babies and children and the elderly, and they are murderers. But we also have people who are very curious, saw that the fence was open, saw that this was happening on social media, just walked into Israel being curious and took pictures on their phone. We can't hold them forever without prosecuting them. Of course, entering Israel is already an offense, but you can't compare the two. So what do you do with them? This is a democratic state and there needs to be proper proceedings. So every single one of them deserves a defense. Does Israel have enough defense lawyers to defend all of them? No. Do we have enough defense lawyers that are willing to defend Hamas terrorists? Also, no. So how are we going to do that, ensuring that their rights are kept and there's due process and we can prosecute them according to the law? It's very complicated. We don't have enough judges. We don't have enough courtrooms to prosecute each and every one of these hundreds personally. But of course, if we think about it like that, then we should. But maybe it's more wise to do it in groups. So how do we do it in groups? And the question is, do we do it by organization? So we do Hamas, Islamic Jihad, and other groups and civilians separately? Or do we do it geographically? So anybody who was caught in Neil Oz, anybody who was caught in Be'eri, anybody caught in Kfar Aza, and then you have a mix of civilians and organizations. So as you can see, it's very complicated. And first, we have to let the police conduct the investigation. We have tons of ballistics. Tons. We have so many crime scenes, over 1,000 crime scenes, different crime scenes, different murder scenes. We have so much footage taken by Hamas themselves of them murdering, butchering people, abusing bodies that they posted online that we copied from the internet. And we also have footage taken by surveillance cameras from private buildings. People have now a surveillance camera on their door and it caught things. And also, which is very interesting, is that these villages are agricultural. So a lot of these places are actually working farms. So a lot of the farmers now have cameras, especially with cattle. And when the cow coughs, they want to know. So they have the surveillance cameras running. So we do have footage that is quite amazing, I don't know, shocking, of cows standing peacefully. And in the background, Hamas is driving around in their vans with missiles in their hands and kidnapping people in the background while the cows are eating hay. Yeah. So we'll need to go through
all of
everything.
These things. How do you think, or do you think this sexual abuse and or the violence that took place, was that organized and planned?
I think it was allowed. I don't know if organized and planned is the right way to describe it. And I'm very careful about explaining what other people think, because half of the time I don't even know what I'm thinking. So I don't want to be presumptuous. But we know now from the investigation of these people that they were told it's not forbidden. So when you tell people something is not forbidden, do you tell them that it's allowed? Do you? It's sort of, the wording is very interesting to me. Because, as I told you, it's not something that is part of Palestinian culture in the region. It's not. And not part of the Jewish culture. This is a foreign influence brought on by the fact that these people had cameras on them, GoPro cameras. So they wanted to be shocking. So we saw a lot of unnecessary abuse, beheadings, abuse of the bodies, which is not something that the Islam of the region did. And also with the sexual violence, I think the fact that we hear from them that suddenly they were told, not as before, suddenly they started getting messages that it's not forbidden. It's not, it's okay if it's done in a specific way or to sue certain people or at a certain occasion. So they started to get these messages. And of course, once they had the chance, they actually started raping. Mm. And they learned from each other. And we saw rapes, but we also have eyewitnesses that saw gang rapes. So that is something that is more of a social thing. When people gang rape, it's a group thing. They trust each other and they egg each other on. And so when we see a lot of people participating in it, then we know that it's something that as a group they know is allowed.
Yeah, socially accepted in
socially
that group.
Socially accepted, yes. In that time, which is, again, something that we've not seen before.
Mm. So if we can, how do you work to make this case known internationally and to get recognition for what happened? There are things also, if we just bring in Norway here, we had the 8th of March,
yes.
just a few days ago, and people there were not allowed to go and show their sympathy to Israeli women being raped on and sexually abused on October 7th. So we had incidents during the 8th of March. So then you have, I've seen that you... believe Israeli women is a hashtag, and then Me Too unless you are a Jew is another one that I read in your papers. So how do you perceive this situation internationally when you talk about these things happening that happened in Israel on October 7th, and how do you make the case known?
I think it's very important for me to do two things. First of all, tell the truth. I think it's the most important thing, what Israel has now, what we don't have, what we know, what we don't know, what are we going to do for certain and what we're not sure of. And I think being honest is the best solution. So because I've been working in this field, I can be absolutely sure that what I'm saying is true, and what I don't know, I don't say. And this is something that I've been doing in London, in Paris, in Berlin, in Moscow, and here in Norway. And I'm flying tonight to Helsinki, and I'm going to do the same thing there. Just say what we have. And the second thing that I think is very important, you read out the hashtags and you spoke about the Women's Day March. I think it's very important to point out that men were raped as well, and it's something that is not talked about enough, because there's this international debate with women's organizations. Do they address it or they don't address it? I think we need to speak about the fact that men were raped. I worked on international conflicts before. I can't remember a time where international bodies addressed the fact that men were raped in conflicts, nor do I remember widespread rape and abuse, sexual abuse of men in this way. And I think it's something we need to start talking about, especially if it's going to happen more and more. Men are not a different group. They are human beings. And when we saw Hamas shooting men in the genitalia and cutting men's penises off, it's done to humiliate people. It's done to hurt them. And the fact that some Hamas took pictures and videos and uploaded them online mean that they were proud of the things that they did. They massacred in huge groups. And what happened in the Nova Festival, just coming into a party and just shooting, I think more than 300 people died at the Nova and Sidak music festivals. And just that is uncontrollable violence. And the fact that it was filmed and broadcasted by Hamas in such a way, I just think it's going to escalate. I think we're going to see more and more conflicts copying what Hamas has done. You and I can go on eBay or Amazon today. We can order a GoPro camera. It's very cheap. It's going to arrive the next day. And any militia group and any terrorist group can order 10 of them online and by tomorrow have mass murders broadcast like it's a reality show. And this is a foreign influence. It never happened in a conflict in our region before. It comes from Al-Qaeda and the beheadings that they took pictures of, ISIS. We saw a lot of influence by fundamentalist groups and a lot of, unfortunately, support for them. For some reason.
So it's both done for show and for telling that this is okay. But on the other hand, it's also proofs and it gets evidence of what happened. So afterwards, if you are prosecuting people, they have actually filmed their crimes themselves.
But I do think the international community is now raising voices that say that this didn't happen and that Israelis are making it up. And they don't believe that Hamas raped people, which is quite weird to me because we have footage of Hamas killing people and beheading people. And people say, okay, they killed and beheaded, but they would rape. Why? Yes, they would. And they did. And we saw that they used standard issue zip ties, tied people up and raped them. And I just think that it's something that scares me because it's going to happen again. Not only in my region. I mean, not only in my country. I think what we're going to see is a spread of fundamentalist Islam that says that raping is fine, which was not something that they said before, and that taking videos and pictures of it is not only allowed, but something that is preferred. And then you just have war porn being broadcasted. And it really, really ensues more violence.
What role does the UN play here in supporting you and what happened and the murders of October 7th?
I think they have responded too late, to tell you the truth. They had an investigation being done. I've met with the envoy, with Pramila Patten, and I met her in Jerusalem. And for me, it was very clear that she was very well informed and wanting to really write a report that's going to be clear and to have evidence. But it was really done too late. If she needs to issue the report by the end of February, then coming in January is too late. You don't have enough time to interview everybody, to talk to. And I mean, to me, it wasn't done in a way that allowed her to be as knowledgeable as I would want. And I think the report is, for lack of a better word, it's positive. I don't know if that's what I would say, but it does acknowledge that there was widespread violence. And it's something that I was skeptical of. I didn't expect it to be very clear. I thought she'd be more guarded, and good for her for stating it. But I think we could have gotten a lot more in-depth reports. And I think it's something that the international community could benefit from. I mean, it's not just for me personally as an Israeli citizen. I think the world needs to understand the mechanism behind sexual violence, not only towards women. I think it's important to understand that we could all be subjected to it. It's something that's frightening, but with the rise of terrorism and Islamic groups, it escalates. I think most of the people around our area, both Jewish and Muslim, even people who are Palestinians who live in Israel don't want anything to do with such behavior. I don't think anybody thinks it's something that's going to promote peace. Mm.
What about Hamas here? We have seen, you touched upon what happened in Oslo on March 8th, yes, the Women's Day. But this is just part of many demonstrations, as I believe you also have seen today, before, yes, you came here. That happens in all big cities in the Western capitals, and, mm-hmm, yes, all over. Support for Palestinians. So do you think that Hamas has won what I would call the propaganda war, as this, and this was a part of it? And do you think that, that what happened here, as you said, it's filmed, it's documented by them, but then now these demonstrations are not for Israeli women and men being raped and murdered on October 7th. It's on the other way around. It's on what's happening in Gaza.
I think you're very right. I think the fact that they published on their social media themselves murdering, killing and abducting people have gained them popularity. I think that's very weird, but it's true. We see now that they've gained popularity out of it and they are rewarded for it. And so it's going to happen again because they, as you said, won the propaganda war. I don't know if it's propaganda, or I think they won the public opinion. And for some weird reason, killing and abusing and raping has won them the war, because it's now fought not on the street, but on social media. And if you open TikTok, you can see it. People are justifying it. People are saying that it didn't happen. They are very subjected to messages coming out of Hamas. And I think we need to make a distinction. Hamas is not the Palestinian people. Hmm. Excuse me. Palestinian civilians suffer now because of Hamas's actions. And they don't deserve it. Hmm. They don't deserve it. And I think supporting Palestinians is one thing. And the fact that people mistakenly support a terrorist organization is something completely different. Mm.
The things that you are saying about Palestinians now, do this give you hope for finding peace and some solutions to the conflict? So what do you think? You can comment on both your own country, what will happen there, and of course...
I'm an optimist. I've been to Berlin last week, and walking there in the streets of Berlin, it's been 70 years since the Holocaust, and the only reason I'm here and alive is because my grandmother jumped off a train to Auschwitz. And 70 years later, I have German friends. I walk the streets of Berlin. I eat in their restaurants, and I root for their soccer teams. So if that can happen after what happened in the 30s and early 40s, then I think no conflict is beyond solving. I absolutely believe it. What I also think is that if we support violence, then it keeps peace away. And I really think terror is not the way to go. I think Israel has gone a long way in order to have peace with its neighbors. And I've been fortunate enough to have Jordanian friends and meet with them, and to have Egyptian friends and meet with them. And of course, I was born in the year of peace with Egypt. And I think it's quite possible. We had a lot of conflict and war, and peace came, and the Egyptians are now, I met with them, I have Egyptian friends, and I think what is going on now with Morocco and the Emirates is positive. I really, really would like to see our governments sitting in the room together and being earnest about wanting peace. But that's not happening right now. It really is not. It's not, we still need to heal from what happened. And I'm sure they need to heal from what's happening. It's still going on. Mm. And the war is still, it's too early to speak about agreements, or I think we need to give it a little time, but it's not beyond solving. It's not. If I can support German soccer teams, then maybe it's going to take 10 years. Maybe it's going to take 50 years. Maybe it's going to take 100 years. But none of us are going anywhere. The two sides live on the same land, and they will have to live on the same land. Nobody's going anywhere. Nobody's going back to, or people are living there and they need to coincide, and it's going to happen. And no amount of fences is going to solve this.
Do you believe in the Palestinians getting authorities that might be able to sit down at some point with Israeli governments and with other countries in the region?
Wow, I don't know. I think the involvement of other Muslim countries is a positive thing. I think Israelis saw that Qatar has been playing a huge role. I think we can have people sort of go back and forth and try and bring these sides together. But we'll see. We're sitting now in Oslo. And of course, we had the Oslo agreements. So for me, when I landed here yesterday, I felt like a weird sense of history and connection to Oslo, because Oslo brought Israel and the Palestinians about 10 years of peace. It might not seem like a lot, but maybe it could bring some more. So I do urge you, Oslo people, to help us a bit. Don't support violence. Help us with protecting our people, really, and living together.
I must just say that this conversation about these very serious topics actually ended on a relatively positive note, and I'm really happy for you coming here today, Yael. Thanks so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me.
And if you like Liberal Halvtime, you must rate us and recommend us and give us feedback using my email, matilda@civita.no, or my colleague, eirik@civita.no. Information about Civita is available on our homepage. Thanks for listening, and welcome back.